And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Mother, tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother.
...2018. Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, Sabine brings the Darksaber to her mother, hoping to recruit Clan Ren to the Rebel cause and unite Mandalore. There will be action hero Rao, Mama Bears, and Sabine coming home to a less than stellar welcome. We're talking about Legacy of Mandalore this week. How you doing, Chris? And
I'm doing pretty good.
And
canceled my trip to New York City.
Say what?
I almost had my escape from New York experience. I was going to remember we were probably talking about it the last podcast. I was going to go to New York City and visit Dario Gonzalez, my co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. And I had my bus tickets and everything. I would have literally pulled into New York City on the Friday that basically the shit hit the fan, where everybody was realizing, oh my God, we're going to have a lot of coronavirus patients here soon. And then I would have left today as of this recording. It's Monday, the 17th, 18th, 16th, Monday the 16th. I would have been leaving, my bus would have been leaving New York City at 7:48 or something, which is like 12 minutes before the curfew is, you know, now everything shuts down at 8 o'clock in New York that's left open, you know, like grocery stores and all that. And there's, you know, bars aren't open anymore and stuff like that. So I would have literally just got I would have been like the plague bringer. I would have come in just as they were figuring out they were in big trouble and leaving just as they were starting to lock it down. So I was worried about the bus ride, but I was always also worried about riding the subway. But then I saw pictures of the subway the day that I would have gotten in, and there were all the subway cars with like four people on them and stuff like that. So, but the bus probably would seven and a half hours in a double decker bus packed full of people going to New York City probably wouldn't have been a good idea.
No.
So,
I mean, I've been texting a lot with Jonna from Geeky Bubble Podcast because they do live in New York City.
Yeah.
And she's been kind of keeping me in touch about like how her and Maria are doing. And if you guys listen to Geeky Bubble or you heard Ma and Jonna on our podcast, I got to bust out Jonna because her mom's in the age range to be worried about. And her and her brother kept calling all elderly, and finally Ma was just like, if you keep calling me elderly, I'm gonna kick your ass. And so I was like, Jonna, she's not elderly, she's a classic, leave Maria alone.
She's
but
I was
like,
gonna say vintage, but that sounds bad too.
But like, yeah, like she's been kind of telling me what's going on up there as well, and it definitely sounds like it's crazy down here in Georgia. And I know the show is coming out in a few weeks at the time that we're recording this and stuff, but like it's probably not gonna get it's going to get worse before it gets better. And listeners, like, we love you very much. Like, please take all the precautions, wash your hands, don't touch your face, do everything that they're saying, stay at home, binge listen, J Guys and Jedi, I mean, share our podcast. But no, but in all seriousness, guys, like, we love you so much. Please stay safe. Be careful. Stay indoors. Don't hoard things.
don't freak out.
Yeah, and don't panic. Like, just, like, you know, Disney Plus just put on Frozen 2, and I hear they're releasing Tross early. And if you haven't, whatever. Whether or not you like Tross, you can hate watch it at home. But yeah,
I have a copy. I have a copy of Tross on my computer right now, and I was just like, I was just flipping through it and going like, oh, because I haven't watched it all the way through since I saw it in the movie theater. It's the one Star Wars movie. I watched it in the theater once. I didn't go back to. I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater. I had a bootleg copy that I sort of like watched a little bit of, and then stopped watching it and never went back to it. So I was watching little parts of it going, man, this is going to be an interesting commentary for Hope and I to do.
One day. Yeah, I still haven't seen it a second time. I haven't brought myself to that. But, like, what it comes down to, guys, like, we love you. Just be smart. Don't panic. Stay safe. Watch Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Don't panic.
I've heard that there's a bunch of the companies are going to take all their movies that are in the theater and put them on, like, streaming views so people can, instead of going to the movies, they can see whatever they can. I'm sure they're going to have to pay for it, too, but, you know.
Was it Patrick Delmore?
There's not a lot of good movies out now, too, so it's not the great.
It was Patrick Delmore who wrote, hey, what if drive-in movies make a comeback?
That would be nice. Yeah. That would be
cool. I've never been to a drive-in movie, and I always wanted to go, but they closed the one that's really close to me. So, and then built a shitty-ass Regal on top of it.
Yuck.
Wow. Let's talk about, guys, we love you. Seriously, we love you. But let's talk about something else. I have an opening question here. So at the time of this recording, the first arc of Season 7 of Clone Wars has wrapped up. It's the Bad Batch arc. Without spoilers, we're not going to spoil anything. What are your thoughts so far, Chris?
So far, it's kind of perfect.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's all I'm going to say. It's like, I really, like, was kind of, like, just, like, I'm not going to say be happy with. I was sort of like wanting them, you know, basically not to make a big deal out of it, just to do the seventh season of Clone Wars, like it never ended. And they sort of did that. But I wasn't factoring in what's going on during that time period. So it has an extra layer to it. And it also has some extra layers to it because everybody that worked on Clone Wars is a lot better, is a lot more experienced and a lot better at what they do. And they'd already worked on this season and they got a chance to go over it again, you know? So it's got just that extra layering of things going on in it and the drama of it. And
I want to note, on that note, that the people who worked on Clone Wars are now back and doing better. Something that, because of course the animatics for this was released in 2015. Like, you could have watched the Bad Batch arc in 2015 if you really wanted to. And something that I've been really appreciating is YouTuber Star Wars Explain, who is Alex Damon. He's been making a point to note changes, and they've made changes to key scenes in the final version. And they're very smart changes. And one, the biggest one was the Anakin and Padme scene and that Obi-Wan scene. and those were changes from the original animatics. And that's what I like everything. Like, I think with them having the second
chance. Well, those are some of the best parts of the four episodes, too.
Yeah. And what I like about it is they are aware this is the end. And so if you watch the original animatics, it's more plot driven. It doesn't have like as heavy as the emotional beats, but they're actually rewrote some key scenes to make it more personal and more emotional because they're aware that this is the end. The thing with me about this season is it's very like the fact that Revenge of the Sith is just looming on the horizon makes every single scene so important. Because it was Sky Talkers that said that this is the Anakin Skywalker goodbye tour. At any moment, it could be the last time Anakin sees Rex, Anakin sees Ahsoka. This could have been the last Anakin and Padme scene before episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the last time we're seeing Anakin as a hero. Because when this season ends, he's Vader. and everything has so much more emphasis because Revenge of the Sith is on the horizon. We're going to be there in 8 episodes. And it just, it gives so much like gravity to the show. Like I was watching, like in the very opening episode, there's a moment where Rex kind of like withholds information from Anakin, and it ends up not mattering later on. But when I was watching that first episode and Rex withholds that information from Anakin, I was like, is that going to be like a fracture between their trust right before episode 3?
Yep.
And of course it ended up not mattering. But like when I was watching that episode at the time, just episode 1, I was like, oh, that could be a big thing. And that's what I love about it. Like the show is aware that it's about to end and it's trying to wrap up these very emotional journeys. Like Rex's story is a very emotional story, but it's one that's earned because Rex has earned it through the previous 6 seasons, and it's so good.
Yeah.
So that's for me my favorite thing is like how much, and you can see it in Anakin. You can tell that he's reached that point that he is Anakin, like literally days away from episode 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's one scene in particular that I was just like, oh, there's that Vader.
Yep.
So that's my favorite thing about it, is just how grave, how episode 3 is making this season so hit so much harder, because you know it's coming. In 8 episodes, there's no more Anakin. It's gonna be Vader. And it just makes it very fascinating to watch.
Yep, and I'm very curious now that first arc's wrapped up, where it's going to go next.
Me too.
If we're going to have a focus on some different characters.
I think the rest of the season is all Ahsoka focused. If that's my assumption, because the next 4 episodes is going to be Ahsoka's walkabout, and the last 4 episodes are going to be Siege of Mandalore, which are all very Ahsoka focused arcs. Which
right.
I think that's a very smart thing, because we know the story from Anakin and Obi-Wan's point of view. So why not give it this last season to Rex and Ahsoka?
Yep. Well, that's the story that we didn't see. Anakin gets a whole movie with episode 3, so.
Yeah. But I really love what they're doing. I can't wait to go into to see the rest of it. I'm ready. As much as I love Rex, like, I'm ready to get into Ahsoka content. Like, I'm so ready.
I'm kind of glad they didn't do like Netflix, and they don't do like Netflix and just drop the whole season, because I would have watched it all by now, so.
I like
having it spread out a little. I like having it every week.
I feel like somebody said that the way the days fall, it ends on like, I think it ends on May the 4th is the last episode.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
No, that can't be right, because there's 4 more episodes. Oh, no, wait, there's 8 episodes. So hold on. Hope's going to count this. There's 8 episodes. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's May 8th. So they could technically release the last episode on Monday, May 4th.
The last episode will probably be a 2-parter that they'll release together. How about that?
I think it's just going to be a straight up hour long episode. That's my assumption. I think it's going to be just like hour long. Jam. Final. Kind of like what they do with Rebels. So. I'd actually be very surprised if they kept it just 22 minutes.
Right,
I'd be super surprised. So, I love it. Well, you ready to talk some Rebels?
I'm ready.
So what do you think of this episode?
It was good. I did not, maybe not quite as good as the last episode, but still very good.
I felt the same way. Like, I really liked this episode. It was just under last week's for me as well.
Last week, like, just the way it was so heavily tilted towards the drama was really neat. And this one had the more standard mixture between the drama and, you know, action in visual. It was a far more normal episode, quote unquote.
But still had lots of drama.
Yeah.
Been a hot minute since we've done that. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Legacy of Mandalore is the 53rd episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on February 18th, 2017. It was written by Christopher Yost and directed by Mel Zweier. some extra information for you. I'm going to butcher everyone's names. I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry, you guys. I'm going to try. Ursa Wren is voiced by Sharmila Devar, or Devar. I'm assuming it's Devar. Her other works include Scandal, Outsourced, and Marriage Story with Adam Driver, which I still need to see. But I want to see a Marriage Story, but every time I go to watch it, I'm just like, do I really want to go through this emotional drama tonight? Nope. And then I watch My Little Pony or something. Anyway, friendly reminder that Ursa Wren was part of Maul's Death Watch group back in the Clone Wars. Tristan Wren is voiced by Ritesh Rajan. His other works include Stitchers, 25-ish, Russian Doll, and the recent Disney live-action Jungle Book. Sabine's home is not on Mandalore, but on a planet known as Cronist. It's part of the Mandalorian sector and has been the Clan Wren's ancestral home for many years. The look of the Wren Mansion is strongly influenced by Frank Lloyd Wright's prairie-style architecture, but with some Mandalorian aesthetics. Before moving Lucasfilm Animation to San Francisco, the Big Rock campus of Skywalker Ranch had a very similar architecture, which is what also influenced their mansion. The portrait of Ursa Wren seen in the Great Hall is done in a style similar to that of Gustav Klimt. Klimt. The idea of Sabine having a sibling has been a story thread evolving over the course of the series. In series pre-production, Sabine was to have a twin sister named Sacha. Later, it was changed to her brother, but early drafts had him be the protector of Concord Dawn. This was later changed to Finn Rao. In early story developments, Tristan's name was Jonah. And finally, for Rebels Recon for this episode, they talk about how Clan Wren has fallen on hard times since the Empire took over Mandalore. They've been mixed up in the politics of Mandalore, going through the years of damage control just to restore their status. It was a choice to give Clan Wren's color palette a lot of gray coloring to show how downtrodden they are. Dave Filoni also notes that Ursa, not Sabine's father, is the Wren. Her father married into a more powerful family and took her name. Dave Filoni also noted that there was about 1,000 planets in the Mandalore system. He thought a lot about the houses and clans of Mandalore. Some houses and clans, like House Vizsla from Clone Wars, they are more entitled to be, and that they are more than other houses and clans. And I just thought that was an interesting note for something like The Mandalorian, the TV show The Mandalorian, because, like, what does it mean to me? What does it mean to be a true Mandalorian? And I think that's going to be a very important part of the show. That's why I noted that. Anyway, the Wrens are not from Mandalore. They are a branch that has been conquered and brought into Mandalore culture a long time ago, but they are loyal to House Vizsla. They also talk about how Ursa killing Gar Saxon is a huge moment because it draws the line in the sand. It claims where Clan Wren stands with the Imperials and the Mandalore politics. Some of the other clans will see that as a power move. Others will see them as traitors. But that act of Ursa killing Gar Saxon is the start of the Mandalorian Civil War. Do you know who else causes civil wars with ladies' hearts?
Oh!
Wow. How you doing, Yoda?
Yoda's good.
You sound a little rough over there. Are you okay?
Yoda's fine.
Oh, no. Did you get the virus?
No, the virus a Jedi cannot get. No.
Is it allergies? Midichlorians
destroy virus. Yoda's safe.
Maybe we should not ask you a question this week, Yoda. Maybe
a question for you. Yoda, you have?
So, this week, guys, we're going to practice social distancing and say goodbye to Yoda.
Nah, what?
No, Yoda, you should go.
Oh.
I need to disinfect my microphone.
That Yoda touched microphone.
No, don't be like that. Don't be like that NBA player.
Soft, foamy microphone.
Oh.
Microphone tastes yum.
I'm so glad you live with Chris and not with me.
Chris, do you have for Yoda?
No, I don't. No, no.
The hug you have for Yoda?
No, God, you're
Yoda's
wait.
Safe.
Where's the spray bottle? Go to bed. Stay home. All right. You ready for act one?
I guess.
You guess?
Well, I'm about ready to just like bathe in Purell is what I'm about ready to do after that little incident.
Before the end of the episode, Chris is going to get the Yodana virus.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm here all week because I'm self-quarantined, guys.
I heard somebody at work mispronounce it as the cornholoviral.
Oh.
The cornholoviral. And I'm like, that's a different disease, man. I don't know which one is worse.
Oh, Lord. Anyway. Act one.
Act one.
Did you say the cornhole a virus?
He said the cornholo viral.
Like the game cornhole?
Like the game cornhole. I think he was thinking of cornhole. He was getting Corona, cornhole, and maybe cornholio from Beavis and Butthead all mixed up together.
Are you threatening me?
I am cornholio.
Yeah. I need teepee for my bunghole.
No one can get it because everyone's hoarding toilet paper.
Exactly. Oh, don't worry. I'm sure I'm not the first one who's made that joke, especially by the time this one airs.
Oh, Lord. Okay, act one. You ready?
Act one.
After going through some kick-butt training and emotional feels while getting an awesome new Darksaber laser sword, it's time for Sabine to face her family. Sorry, I'm still laughing. Sabine, Ezra, Kanan, Chopper, and Finn are flying back to her home planet of Cronist. Sabine is thrilled, and by thrilled, I mean that sarcastically. She's pretty damn nervous. Ezra tries to spin it in a nice way, but Rao is like, nah, kid, they're gonna try and eat us alive. But even your Empire-following mom is a true Mandalorian and wants what's best for our home. And Sabine's like, they all still think I'm a traitor. But Rao reminds her of her awesome new laser sword and how important it is. They fly in to the planet, and Sabine calls in Mandoa. I had to burp halfway by when I was saying Mandoa. She calls in Mandoa. Sorry, I had to burp again. For some reason, the word Mandoa makes me burp. To make sure that they don't get shot out of the sky. But the Mandos aren't too happy to see them, and they jam their signal, which isn't a good thing. And they got Mandos with jetpacks incoming. They shoot some rockets at them, but Sabine is going to dodge all of them in the ship. And the Mandos land on the Phantom minivan and shoot out its thrusters. And they go down, and Sabine is able to, in parentheses, safely crash and land the ship. They stumble out and Rao's like, huh, I thought recruiting the Rens was going to be easy. My bad. But Kanan has a plan and they make Rao hide on the ship. Friendly reminder that Rao worked for the Protector Concord Dawn. He's three buddies with the Empire, but switching to the Rebels made the Empire kill his men. And the Imperial supporting Clan Ren will probably see him as a traitor. So it's a good thing that Rao is hiding. Anyway, the Mandos land, and Ezra whips out his lightsabers, and this spooks the Mandos, and a shootout starts. Sabine chews out Ezra for disarming one of the Mandos, and Ezra says her name in the exchange. And the lead Mando hears her name and calls everyone off. He removes his helmet, and it's Sabine's brother, Tristan. I meant to look this up. I think Tristan's her younger brother. I forgot to look it up. I'm pretty sure he's the younger brother. He's wary to see her, but he agrees to take them to their bitchin' Ren mansion. I mean, it's like Cribs, but with the Rens. And she's probably not going to be welcome home. As they head out, Chopper is left behind. He goes into the Phantom minivan and lets Rao know that the coast is clear. Anyway, the Mandos and the Jedi walk like 20 feet before Sabine is like, ugh. Tristan, that armor is so bland and Imperial. How can you wear that? And Tristan blows it off, going, I like my white armor, and you just don't know what you're talking about. And they all arrive at the Bitchin' Wren Mansion, and they all stand at attention as Sabine's mom, Ursa Wren, comes out. And Mama Bear Wren is not happy that Sabine is back and immediately calls for her daughter to be locked up. But Sabine is like, nope! And she whips out the Darksaber, stunning everyone into silence. What'd you think of Act 1?
Pretty good. Not a lot of notes on it.
I can't remember what I wrote. I don't remember my notes.
I definitely got one of my notes slashed with the Frank Lloyd Wright. It kind of reminded me of Frank Lloyd Wright mixed with a lot of this sort of Icelandic architecture. It reminded me of, like, actually the terrain was more like my neck of the woods where I grew up, like with the pine tree, you know, type of like evergreen trees. And but like just I like how they captured the grayness of winter. It's a different kind of winter than like the Hoth or the snow planet with the cigar face guys from Clone Wars.
In the episode Trespass.
Yeah. And so it had its own, it had a very Earth-like, I mean, it was a very Frank Lloyd Wright building. It was just like a very big, it was like a giant Frank Lloyd Wright house. If Frank Lloyd Wright built buildings that big, they didn't look like that, but he built like smaller houses that looked like that, but they just had a gigundous house like that.
I didn't put it in my notes, but the house, their house, the way it's like in the middle of the woods and everything, it reminded me of the Cullen house in Twilight. The one time I had to watch Twilight.
Well, yeah, I mean, that grayness of that, too, is very Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it actually is very Pacific Northwest looking.
Look at you knowing where Twilight is set.
Huh?
Look at you knowing where Twilight is set.
I know things. I saw the first Twilight movie.
Yeah, sadly, me too.
I don't remember that much. I remember it was, like, bearable to watch, but it wasn't a good movie. Anyway.
I went with my mom and my sister, because my sister was really into Twilight, and I just went along, and I was just, like, sitting there, and they were enjoying it, and I was just watching, going, like, this movie is terrible.
All right, guys, whatever gets you into the weird stuff.
Whatever makes people read. I know that, like, one of my sisters, I won't say which one, it was, like, the first book she had read since high school. And I was like, you know what? If it makes you read, not going to complain.
Yep. Yeah. Can only be a stepping stone to more reading. So.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue. And, hey, there's many things on my enjoy list that I'm sure are highly suspicious to any other people.
I mean, I'm an avid My Little Pony fan. I can't say anything.
Yeah.
So my Little Pony has.
You have a better better excuse as a My Little Pony fan now than say in the 80s.
And My Little Pony has been nominated for multiple awards.
Right. I was just thinking about that. Like, My Little Pony is basically its origins are in the like crassest, most commercial, like just make something so we can tie in a toy to it. You know, like it wasn't somebody's. Somebody was like, I have this idea of how to teach togetherness and diversity. It'll be called My Little Pony. It was more like, let's launch a line of toys. And then like in the 30 or 40 years, it's mutated into an actual platform for like social messaging and stuff. It's hilarious. Like the exact opposite of what it was originally designed for. Anyway,
finale was so good. Anyway.
my only other note is just like, you know, as you always notice how the animation, little things in the animation as it gets better and better. And Rao has nose spots. Like they have a close up of Rao talking and he's just got these like little like older discoloration, you know, skin spots on his nose. That older, you know, that you would see on an older person. And I just thought that's just a really nice little detail, you know, to add to stuff. And, you know, you keep, I mean, when you compare all the shows and like you, as time goes on, the faces become more expressive and they start learning to add more things to them, to more subtlety. It was just something I noticed. That's all I got for part one.
I missed those nose spots. Most of my notes are really small for this too. My first note was when Sabine is dodging rockets in the air and she does like that spin thing. I was just sitting there going, no one wears seatbelts in Star Wars. And so when she flipped over the McPhantom minivan, I was just like, man, that's a lot of blunt force trauma they just got.
Oh, they should have been thrown all over they should have all been in different places in the cockpit and upside down and just like tangled up in each other. Yeah, but
you
know.
We discovered in our commentary, I think it was the A New Hope commentary. Because at one point, like, they put on their seatbelts as they're flying. Because I remember going, oh my god, they're putting on seatbelts! So, the scene where Sabine is crash landing is really beautiful. The one I'm thinking about is, like, there's a ground shot looking up and you see the ship pass overhead. But you see it clip the top of the trees and it shakes down snow.
Yeah, and the trees look like they're a painting. I was like, oh, is this just a painting? And I'm like, we'll see when the ship flies by if the trees move or if they're just a painting. And then they moved. It was really neat.
Yeah, and then the other thing is as they're walking through the woods, I noticed it mostly with Ezra at first, and then I noticed they were all doing it. But when they would step in the snow, you would see that moment where the snow resisted their foot, and then the weight would make them sink down. So it was like step, resist, sink, step, resist, sink, like how you actually walk in snow. Like it always has that moment of resistance when you step in snow before you sink into it. It was really nice. Like it was a really nice shot. I love Ursa's name because Ursa is Latin for bear and she is a mama bear, which is why in my notes, why I keep calling her Mama Bear Wren. It's because Ursa is Latin for bear. Ursa's helmet, it's that gray with like the little gold points on it. It actually reminds me a lot of the armorer from The Mandalorian because she has that gold spiky helmet and it's kind of a very similar shape. They're not quite the same, but that's what it reminded me of. And I also was wondering if that was a nod to her Death Watch past, because all the Maul Mandalorians, once they joined Death Watch, they had spikes on their helmets. So I'm wondering if that was a callback back to her being part of Maul's group, but I couldn't find anything to support that theory. So.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. And then my last one is, I just love that mic drop of like where they're like, arrest her, and Sabine just fucking takes out the Darksaber and everyone's just like, oh damn. Like I really love that moment. It's such a good, usually when you see people make like fan like AMVs or you have trailers for Rebels and stuff like that, like that's a scene that is almost in like every fan video of like yes. Rebels and stuff. It's just it's an iconic moment of the show. So that's all my notes for Act One. Most of my notes are actually in Act Two, so
yeah, I would imagine.
So
this is the one where with the most Act One is set up, this is all the drama, and then like
Act Three is
the action resolution of the drama, but this is where all the family drama happens.
The meat of the story.
Yes.
So let's get into these chicken thighs. Act Two.
Okay.
I said chicken thighs with an F.
Chicken thighs.
Act Two?
Act Two. Let's chickify this puppy.
Chicken thighs.
Chicken puppies. That's my gonna be my restaurant someday that I'll retire to. Chicken puppies. Come on down to chicken puppies.
In my head, I just saw this like weird like centaur hybrid of a chicken and a dog for like half a second.
It'll just be fried chicks, but we call them chicken puppies because it's not as horrifying as the idea of eating chicks.
Act two. Ugh. So Sabine just dropped the Darksaber mic, and she's like, Space Dad, Ezra, this is my mom, Ursa Wren. And Ezra, being Ezra, shouts, Hi! And he waves, and he immediately gets stopped at gunpoint by the other Mandos. Ursa has no fucks to give about any of this. She flat out states that Sabine is wanted by the Empire. And Sabine is like, ugh, Mom, I'm with the Rebellion now. Just, like, hear me out or something. And Ursa will allow the Jedi to be there as long as they give up their lightsabers. And Ezra is not happy about giving over his lightsaber. But Kanan is like, dude, we're outnumbered by Mandos. Hand it over. So they hand over their lightsabers and everyone goes inside. Inside, Mama Bear Wren is raving about how the rebels are going to piss off the Empire on Clan Wren. She even goes as far to say that the Darksaber is just a symbol. And Sabine says that it can unite Mandalore. So Ursa explains, because Sabine is labeled as a traitor and ran away, all the other clans are just looking for a reason to destroy Clan Wren, which is pretty much the reason why they serve the Empire. It's for protection. Even Tristan has to serve Gar Saxon to prove his loyalty. Sabine states that Saxon is a murderer, as he murdered all the protectors of Concord Dawn. Ursa counters that Finn Rao will be executed too, when he is found. And then I wrote, insert sad Rao sound here, so... Rao.
Rao, 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 Rao.
That was better. Ursa is done with this conversation. She intends to do what's best to keep her clan safe, but Ursa invites Sabine to walk with her. Now that he's alone, Ezra starts to babble at Tristan like, so, you're Sabine's brother? I didn't know she had a brother. It's not like I was hitting on your sister or anything. Not that I wouldn't hit on your sister. She's pretty and all, but she's not too pretty. Like you, you're gorgeous. I mean, you're not hot. I don't know, am I bi now? Why are all the ribbons so pretty? Am I panicking because I don't want to get beaten up by you? Or because I'm attracted to you? I don't know, being a teenage boy is hard. And Kanan is like, oh my god, take a nap or something. Yeesh. Shut up, Ezra. Now alone, Sabine tries real hard to have a heart-to-heart with her mom. She asks how Ursa could side with the Empire. And Ursa admits that she tried everything to stop Sabine from being labeled as a traitor by the Empire. Ursa was put into an impossible situation. Side with the Empire or be destroyed. Ursa chose to save her people. Ursa says that they even took Sabine's dad captive as a hostage to hold their... I can't read! They took Sabine's dad hostage! There we go. I can't read, apparently. And if Clan Wren acted against the Empire, they'll kill Sabine's dad. Ursa says that she didn't look for Sabine because Sabine running away saved her daughter's life. They shift gears talking about the Darksaber. When Sabine says that she didn't win it from Maul in combat, Ursa flat out says that Sabine doesn't have a claim to it. Ursa says that anyone can hold the Darksaber, but the trick is keeping it with your head. Which is probably a nod to her being in the throne room when Pre Vizsla was beheaded by Maul with the Darksaber. Wink, wink. They start spouting back and forth, calling each other selfish and a control freak, but Ursa calls her daughter a warrior, which is like a super high compliment in Mando culture, which calms their argument. Sabine admits that the rebels need some Mando help. She gives a passionate speech about how this could be the path to free Mandalore, and Sabine puts her trust in her mother and hands her the Darksaber. Tristan gets his mom, who's getting a Skype call. During this, Rao is being all sneaky and he listens in on the Skype call. And Ursa talks to Gar Saxon. And she's giving up that she has two Jedi for him to collect. She'll trade the Jedi if it means that it will save her daughter. And Saxon says that he's on his way and ends the call, Ball Saxon! For the life of me, I could not remember the nickname we gave Gar Saxon. And
Ball Saxon.
It's Ball Saxon. Oh Ball my god. Saxon. And just hit me. Well, he will be called Ball Saxon for the rest of this. Thanks. Sorry, I was like, when I was writing these notes, I was like, I know we gave him a nickname, and I can't find it, and I don't have time to listen to our old episode to find it.
Ball. So, anyway. Ball Saxon.
Ball Saxon. And Rao is just moving super fast, and he goes full secret agent mode. He gets in those vents so fast that the Jedi would be super impressed, and he picks up Kanan and Ezra's lightsabers. Back in the throne room, it's Birth Mama Bear versus Space Dad. And Space Dad says that Ursa has no idea who Sabine has become. Ezra butts in saying that they fought Ball Saxon, who said he was proud for killing off the protectors of Concord Dawn. Sabine fighting Ball Saxon is news to Ursa, who looks horrified because she just called that jerk and told him that her daughter was there. So Ursa has no choice but to show her cards and has her men hold the Jedi at blaster point. Meanwhile, during all this, Sabine is sparring with her brother, and Tristan takes out all his anger in the fight, spouting how Sabine pretty much ruined all their lives. And Tristan says that Ursa will trade the Jedi for their safety. They hear ships arriving, and Sabine runs out to save her space family. In the throne room, Sabine rushes in just as Ball Saxon is arriving. Bum bum balls.
Just as the balls are rolling in.
Yeah, thank you. Honestly, I was like, I don't have time to listen to our old podcast with Gar Saxon, and I know he has a nickname, and it hit me like.
I'm just glad you didn't get it wrong and like come up with like Nut Saxon, and then Nut Saxon comes in. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, Nut Saxon?
Yeah, it hit me halfway through Act Two. So, what did you think of Act Two?
I liked it. There's just some interesting. Well. For one, it's got a real sort of the family drama in this and just the way it feels. Even though Dune's set on a sand planet, it feels very Dune-like to me, this whole thing, for some reason, more than Star Wars-y. It's kind of interesting. But I like how we're getting a little bit of the story of how the clans are sort of disintegrating and... Mostly because of just association with the Empire, you know.
I didn't note it, but that's a very good point because you can actually see the path of what it becomes in the show The Mandalorian.
Right.
You know what they become. And this is that's a good point. I forgot about that.
It sort of lays the groundwork for why they're so like in such bad shape in The Mandalorian, and I like that. And I like this is the first time in Rebels. Of course, we didn't have it in Clone Wars at all because he wasn't the Emperor then. But this was the first time, and it would figure it would be the Mandalorians talking like that. Most people talk about the Empire, but the Mandalorians a couple times, instead of saying the Empire is doing this or the Empire, they're saying the Emperor. You know, so they're it's just a subtle thing, and in Star Wars very rarely... Like, would people say, you know, the Emperor instead of saying, you know, just the Empire as a vague thing? So I just thought that was interesting, and it would make sense. I would expect the Mandalorians to be maybe more precise in the way yeah. they think about it militarily and stuff. So I just thought that was interesting that, like, they would refer to the Emperor doing something rather than the Empire doing something.
That's right. I never thought of it that way. Yeah.
But that's all I got for Act Two. I figured you would have plenty to say about the feelings. Feelings.
Well, as for my notes, I just fucking love that scene where Ezra's just like, "Hi, I'm Ezra," and all the Mandos are like, "Ah!"
They all point. You at die God. Now.
And what?
That's just sort of what Ezra, that's how usually Ezra's met with when he goes, hi.
I know. But, like, I love that scene because it is the most Ezra thing. Like, it was spot on in character for him. And just that moment, because all the Mandos were like, we don't say hi. And he's just like, oh, I'm sorry. I laughed so hard. I loved it. So my next note is, I found it really interesting the debate that Ursa and Sabine have about the Darksaber as a symbol. It's pretty much an argument of like practicality versus hope and faith, because symbols can be used as very powerful rallying points for people, but they can also just be seen as tools and items. And so I liked that moment where Ursa was just like, it's just a symbol. And I was a little bit surprised. I was like, oh, it's a Mando symbol. So I just like that little kind of
exchange. It's a symbol, but it's a symbol of power. So.
Yeah, but like she was just like, it's just a symbol. And I like that exchange because symbols can be very powerful, but they can also be seen as just symbols as well. The thing that keeps coming to my mind is the American flag, because some people see it as kind of like this almost... is going to sound really weird, but almost like it's like a religious thing. Like it's like it's such a powerful symbol that like should be like held. And some people are just like, it's just a flag.
Well, I mean, literally sanctified to the point of where, you know, there's certain ways to handle it. It can't touch the ground and all that, you know. So, like, yeah, that's not even, I don't even think you're stretching it with that, you know. There's, yeah. I mean, I've seen people run into trouble for mishandling a flag in front of somebody who is, say, like a veteran or something like that, you know.
I actually, back a long, 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 long time ago when I was in the Hetalia fandom, Hetalia is this anime where they personify the nations of the world, and so, like, the nations of the world are actually characters. So America is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy that eats cheeseburgers and gets...
One of the first podcasts we did together.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was, you're right. And I remember being at photo shoots, and people have the flags of their characters' countries, and I remember people giving, like, long speeches about, like, not letting the flags touch the ground, and, like, some of the cosplayers were just like, yeah, we cannot let this do this, and other cosplayers were like, what, it's a prop for my costume. So it was very interesting, to have those photo shoots, but, I liked that conversation that they had, but... From Sabine's point of view on that, I like seeing how far she's come just from the beginning of last episode. Because remember in Trials of the Darksaber, she didn't want anything to even do with the Darksaber. She didn't believe in it. She didn't want the responsibility. She didn't want to put her faith into it. And now she's arguing its merit with her own mother. And it's a cause that she believes in. And that's a lot of character growth in like half an hour, 40 minutes between the beginning of last episode to this point.
Well, and it's funny because Mandalorians, it's funny because, you know, I mean, they're obviously have a strong matriarchal streak in them, but they're kind of macho, you know, like traditionally macho, like Sabine standing up for herself is what, like, even though they disagree, Sabine standing up and making her point strongly and stuff is what impresses her mother. It's just like, you know, you can fight, you know, I respect that of you, you know, whereas if she had shown more weakness, her mother probably would have been disappointed. But like in her her disagreeing with her mother is actually like an impressive thing. It's a little Klingon too.
Klingon-y. These kind of butch ladies are like totally my jam. Totally my jam. My next note is about Ursa. I love how absolutely complicated she is because she really is in a very difficult position because she serves the Empire because it's to save her family and her clan. It's a really tough choice. She has to stand against her own daughter to save lives, and she has to pimp out her son to fucking Ball Saxon to do it too. But then we get this moment of her alone in private with Sabine, and you see Ursa's mommy side come out, and we can see that she clearly loves Sabine and she cares for her daughter. She was happy Sabine ran away because she knew it saved her life. And she even admits that she has to side with the baddies so her husband isn't killed. And she even betrays like Sabine's friends to try to save her by giving up the Jedi to Ball Saxon. So like, Ursa is just such a wonderfully complicated character, and they do a good job of showing her as a leader and showing her as a mother and making sure that those two, it's not like two sides of the coin, like they're all connected and it's all this like one really complicated person.
Well, yeah, it's a more realistic portrayal of, you know, well, that the thing about it is like the way Mandalorians are set up, like an American politician, their kid is just their kid, you know, but in Mandalore, you know, Sabine is not just the kid of her mother. She's, you know, an heir to all that of her family and all of Mandalore and all this. So there's so much more, like the political, social and familial stuff is all the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so like just by virtue of being her mother's daughter, she's tied up in the Empire, you know, and she got tied up in the Empire herself. So, you know, they all got tied up in the same mess because it's all just, you know, baked in together.
Yeah. I mean, I just, I love that conversation she has with Sabine, because, like, we see a leader Ursa, and she's just not budging. But, like, once she's alone with Sabine, like, you see how much pain it causes her. Like, her husband could be killed at any moment.
Yeah.
And she has to, like, give out her own son all to save people's lives. And she, like I said, she was happy Sabine left because it saved her daughter's life. And that, it kind of reminded me, actually, a little bit of Shmi Skywalker. You know, like, Shmi gives up Anakin to have a better life. And it caused, we know it caused Shmi pain. We know it hurt her to give up her son. But it also, well, I was about to say, it
well,
saved,
Shmi, Shmi
it
is just the opposite.
Slavery, I should say. It did not
well,
save
Shmi
Anakin
is,
in the
Shmi
end.
Shmi is the opposite side of the coin. She's, both of them, like, sacrificed for their family, but, like, one from a position of, like, a lot of power and one from a position of absolutely no power, you know?
Yeah.
To where she herself was just getting sold from Watto to, you know, her new husband and all that, you know. So, yeah, but similar. It rhymes. Hope it rhymes.
Star Wars. It rhymes. So,
But this is the stuff that makes it feel like Dune to me. It's the family stuff in Dune. It's not similar story elements, but the way the family and politics and, you know, the rebellions and things, how they're all tied together. That's maybe why I was getting a Dune vibe.
Yeah. My next part of this Ursa note, I wish they kind of went into this more, because I really do wonder if part of these hard times are because Ursa used to be part of Death Watch. And we know that the Death Watch Mandos did end up siding with the Empires. So she, in theory, should be good, but I wonder if it made her, like, her being part of Death Watch made other houses and clans see her as a traitor, because they're also the group that helped kill Duchess Satine in Clone Wars. And it's just, like, and so, like, I have this, like, big old Death Watch question about Ursa and, like, how that affects things and how that affects the politics of everything. And I don't think it's ever addressed in Clone Wars as how much Ursa's past of Death Watch affected her clan and her family. And that is one thing in Rebels I wish they touched on just a little bit more, because we saw in the episode Protectors of Concord Dawn, the moment that Sabine was like, I'm House Vizsla, Clan Wren. The Protectors were like, she's part of Death Watch.
Yeah. So but I bet you the Mandalorians being the way they are, like, to, you know, I don't know how it would proportionally break out, but I'll bet you a lot of people hated Death Watch, a lot of people loved Death Watch, and a lot of people secretly loved Death Watch and secretly hated them. So everybody's got their, all, like, they've all got their little grudges and alliances within all their clans and stuff, and, you know, so, yeah.
We did get to see a little bit of that in Clone Wars in those final Maul episodes with Death Watch. We saw a little bit of that, not too much though. But
you saw Death Watch was, yeah, it was kind of scandalous, you know.
Yeah, but then we see in The Mandalorian, the TV show The Mandalorian, that Death Watch is good. They're the ones that rescue Din Djarin.
Yeah.
They're the ones who save his life. So to him, they're heroes. So, I mean, it's very interesting. That's probably my only, like, tiny gripe of this episode is I wish they, and it's kind of like a tiny gripe of, like, Ursa in Rebels, is I kind of wish they went into that just a little bit more. But that's, like, the smallest of gripes. And then my last note is a little bit of speculation. And I just want to say, like we said at the top of the episode, we've only seen the Bad Batch arc. So by the time this episode comes out, this note might not mean anything. And we might know something. But it made me wonder if we're going to see Ursa Wren in Season 7. Because we know that Maul and his Mandos are coming back in the Siege of Mandalore. And I think it would just be a cool little cameo if, like, even if she's just in the background, it's like, that's Ursa, there she is. Like a young Ursa Wren. Because actually Sabine is, like, one or two at the time of the Siege of Mandalore. Like, she's a toddler. So I just thought that would be, like, a cool, like, little nod of, like, oh, is that Ursa in the background? Cool.
It could very well be likely. Or she could actually be a character.
Gar Saxon, too. Gar Saxon, we know that Gar Saxon worked with Maul because he's in the Son of Dathomir comics.
Who are you talking about?
Ball Saxon.
Yeah, oh, Ball Saxon. Yeah, I know that guy.
But Ball Saxon is in the Son of Dathomir comics with Maul. He's the one that actually saves Maul from Dooku's prison. So I think it's really likely that we'll see Ball Saxon in Clone Wars, too. I think that would be a really cool nod, too.
Good. I hope he has a different haircut. More about that in Act 3.
It does. It's a really terrible haircut. Mandalorians, unless they're like, okay, very Aryan Mandalorians have the dumbest hair. Really, like, brown skin Mandalorians have the coolest hair. There is no in between.
I don't want to blow my notes for scene act three, so I'm just gonna wait on that comment.
Yeah, Ursa's line about Pre Vizsla losing his head to the Darksaber when Maul killed him was spot on. She was in the throne room when that happened, so when she was like, yes, but the point, when you have to keep the Darksaber, you have to keep it with your head. I was like, ooh, she talking about Pre Vizsla. So, and my last note is kind of like, one's a story note and the other one's a very personal note. I love the scene when it's Space Dad versus Mama Bear, because I'm just going to say it. Kanan is Sabine's adopted father. He is her dad. And he has been raising her, and he has been spending the last formative years with Sabine, and has raised her to who she is now with Hera. Ursa raised her as a child, but Ursa hasn't been in Sabine's life recently. So she knows who Sabine used to be, but not who she is now. And I like that argument between them, because neither of them are wrong. They both love Sabine very dearly. It's clear that they both really love Sabine. So I liked that conversation that they had where Kanan's like, look, I know you love her, but you also don't know who she is anymore.
I'll have more notes on that in Act 3, too.
Yeah, and for me, like, that scene really resonated personally, because it's something I very recently witnessed myself. And the reason it resonated with me so strongly is, I mean, I talked about it last week, but you guys know, like, recently my nephew passed away. He was, and my sister was not his birth mom. She was his guardian. But because my sister never fully adopted him, his birth mom came in out of nowhere and, like, took all the funeral rites away from my sister and claimed his body and, like, took over everything and left my sister out in the cold. But where it was really stunning about, like, who his mom was the birth mom was just like, oh, what's his favorite foods for the memorial? Where does he work? What's his favorite Bible verse? And my sister's like, his favorite Bible verse was tattooed on his body, and I paid for it. And I got to see it firsthand of, like, birth moms versus, like, adoptive moms. And unlike that situation, like, Ursa and Kanan care for Sabine. They both clearly love him. And it made that scene, like, really resonate hard with me, because I just very recently witnessed it as of a month ago. And it was a very powerful moment of, like, what it could have been in a positive way if to see two people love a child in a very positive way, opposed to someone who loved a child and someone who didn't know him.
Right.
So, not to bum everybody out, but, like, you know, like, things resonate with us differently in media. And that scene probably wouldn't have meant the same thing to me a month ago. And I think it's always interesting to have conversations when we revisit media, because we see things differently as we age. I know there are times where, like, I know I, as you guys heard
this
in our
conversation. This is the whole reason humans like stories. That's why we have stories.
Yeah. I mean, Empire Strikes Back, I liked it as a child, but as an adult, I'm like, oh, Han's creepy. So things change as we grow older, and that's why it's important to revisit media and to revisit stories, because as we change as people, the stories change too, and they hit us differently, and things become different as we change. And I think it's very important to revisit things. So
yeah, and the best stories are the ones that, like, will sort of change with you, you know.
Yeah,
you can just keep mining newer and deeper stuff out of it as you get older, you know.
Yes, very much so. So, but that's all I had for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 3.
All right. Before we get Action Star Row. Act 3. So, our Jedi are weaponless. Sabine doesn't have the Darksaber at the moment. Sabine's mom just turned them all in, and Ball Saxon is like, ooh, I'm evil. I actually wrote insert evil laugh here, and that was my evil laugh. Anyway. Woo-hoo-hoo, I'm a ball sack! Woo-hoo! Ursa hands Saxon the Darksaber to Sabine's horror, and Ursa says that she upheld her end of the bargain to give him the Darksaber. She just wants him to let Sabine go and take the Jedi. But Ball Saxon is like, hey, thanks for the power symbol, but you're harboring traitors. I just have to kill you all now. And I've been looking for a reason to wipe out your clan for years. And it's a standoff. And Tristan gets in the middle of it. He's like, guys, we're all real Mandalorians here. Surely we can work this out with blasters. So Ball Saxon gives him a choice, since Tristan has been serving him well. Tristan can either join Ball Saxon or die with the Wrens. And there's a little scary scene where Tristan pulls his blaster on Sabine, but he turns and he points it at Ball Saxon, choosing his family. But that's alright, because fucking Finn Rao busted through the window. I just spat on my computer. I just spit all over my computer. That's not CDC approved.
Get the Purell out.
Spitting on computers is not what the CDC advises. Anyway, Rao busting through a window like a fucking action star.
You should see Yoda's computer.
Didn't we tell you to go home? Go away, Yoda. And he throws... Sorry. And he throws the Jedi their lightsabers, and Ball Saxon actually yells, Rao! Like a big...
Yes! That was noted by me. I was just like, yay! Finally, a payoff, actually, right. In the show.
I know. And a shootout erupts, and it's Mandos are fighting everywhere! They're on the ground! They're in the air! Mandos are fighting everywhere! Dr. Seuss version! And Saxon decides to try and be a dick when he sees Ursa's back turned to him. He approaches with the darksaber. Sabine sees this, and Ezra throws her his lightsaber. She blocks Ball Saxon and saves her mom's life. Ball Saxon grabs Sabine, flies out through the window, and now they're outside! And Clan Wren's window insurance is about to go through the roof, because like three people have busted through windows now. Everyone inside finishes off the rest of Ball Saxon's men, and they run out to Sabine. But she is holding her own in lightsaber combat. Ezra tries to help, but Ursa stops him. Mando Lal says that no one can stop them once a fight has started. And Space Dad is like, oh my god, you people are fucking crazy. That's our daughter, Ursa. But Sabine is doing pretty good, even whipping out a fucking flamethrower on Ball Saxon. Oh, there's some steamy balls. And they have... Now that I remember his name as Ball Saxon, it's so much more fun. They face off on a frozen lake, exchanging blow from blow. And she disarms him and gets both of the sabers. She tells Ball Saxon to yield, but Ball Saxon refuses. He says she's going to have to neuter him to make the Mando choice and kill him. Ezra and Kanan...
Ball sax off.
Ezra and Kanan look worried for a second. But Sabine is more than just a Mandalorian. She's part of the space family. And that's not their way. As she stupidly turns her back to him and walks off. I lost my spot. Oh, Saxon pulls out a blaster. But it's Mama Bear Wren who steps in. And Ursa neuters those balls and kills Saxon where he stands. And Ursa blows the smoke off the tip of her blaster and has her Molly Weasley moment of... Not my daughter, you bitch. Rao says that the death of Ball Saxon will cause chaos in Mandalore, because no one has balls anymore. And Ursa says that maybe it's time that they break stuff to fix their home. Like her windows. That's not written there, I just realized it. Now that everything is settled, Chopper brings the Phantom minivan over, which I guess he fixed during all this time, because it definitely crashed before. And Kanan offers to send Rebellion help, but Ursa says that Mandalore needs to fix their own problems. And Sabine makes a choice. She decides to stay with her family to find a way to get her father back. She doesn't want to run away from her problems anymore. And Sabine stops Kanan before he can say that she's proud of him, because Space Dad is the proudest dad. He's the best dad. And she hugs him, and I'm crying. Ezra and Kanan and Chopper leave. Uncle Rao is also super proud of his Mando niece and says that she would be a bitchin' leader of Mandalore. And Sabine is like, me? Leader of Mandalore? No, I still don't want it. Maybe we should find a character from the Clone Wars, whose sister was the previous Duchess, and we know is a kick-ass warrior. Someone like Bo-Katan, but we'll get to that in later seasons. The end!
My first note is just giant row.
Row! I know! But when Ball Saxon yelled row, I was like, yes!
The first time I saw this, the first watch through when it came out, I was surprised that they decided to have Sabine stay behind. But once I started thinking about it, it kind of makes perfect sense in the whole way that Rebels has been working and the way people... And what you were talking about like Birth Mom and Space Dad. Space Dad is all caught up with Sabine. He's up to date with her because he's living with her. But real mom needs to catch up, you know, so that's where she's got to stay. She's still connected with real mom. It's not like she could be like, no, this is my family now. She's still, you know, still connected there. So it was just my first reaction was like, wow, that's a pretty bold decision. And then I was thinking, no, it kind of makes sense, and it's kind of consistent with the writing so far in Clone Wars and Rebels. So
I actually have a very similar note to that, so I'm going to go ahead and say it now with you. I remember also the first time I watched this episode, I was really shocked that Sabine stayed behind, because that's not a normal move in animation in general.
Right.
I thought that was a very super bold move for them to make, because you just don't see that in cartoons. Normally that they would keep all the main characters together, and sometimes they like separate, but they usually separate in groups, like Ezra would have stayed behind with her or something. But I'm so glad that they didn't do that here, because it is a big change in the dynamics of the space family. Kind of makes a shift. It's a really nice to see them make a move like that, because it's just not a common move in animation in general, and it's a very bold one. Still, it's still very bold to not have Sabine for like 5 episodes.
Well, that's the thing is, yeah, that's the bold thing. Well, the thing about it being bold is it's bold, but you know, they could have, with a show like this, it has a big enough cast that you could do 5 episodes with her, even if she was still in the crew, where she still wasn't doing a lot, you know?
I mean, honestly, you
might as well have her character developing off somewhere else. Then you can focus on more characters. And then, obviously, it gives you the opportunity for some sort of setup for some sort of dramatic return with her and the Mandalorians something like that, you know?
They've been doing that all season, too. I mean, right. Like, you had an episode of just, like, Kanan and Maul, Ezra and Maul. You had Chopper and Zeb in AP5 by themselves. You've had pair-ups of Hera and Ezra earlier in the season when they infiltrated Ezra's house, Hera's house. I had to think about that because I was like, that was pre-commentaries. Did that happen this season? I was like, yes, it happened. Thrawn was in the episode. I mean, you've already had these kind of happening where you have these episodes of them split up. But it just, you knew at the end of it, they would always go back to the space family. And that's what makes this different. Like, Sabine is splitting up with them, but she's not going back home with the space family, which is what makes it different. Even though they've already been doing this all season.
Mm-hmm. My other notes are all kind of
I want to hear this Ball Saxon hair note. I'm interested.
Oh, he's just got such a douchey haircut. He looks like a douchey version. It was funny because you said Aryan. He looks like that. I don't know what his official designation is. White supremacist, white nationalist.
I looked it up. He's actually Emperor's Hand. He's considered the Emperor's Hand.
No, I'm talking about this guy in real life. There's this that guy, Richard Spencer. He's a creepy Nazi guy. He hasn't really been in the news. He sort of crawled back under his rock, but like he had that. Ball Saxon has like this. They have a similar, just sort of like trashy, creepy Aryan haircut. It always looks just douchey, even before it sort of got adopted. But well, I guess it's always been sort of the Aryan look or whatever. But it's just. Yeah. But that's good because he's a creepy, unlikable character. So that's good because Mandalorians are almost by default cool. So you have to make them really awful to get a good hate on for a Mandalorian. So I guess bravo, but bleh.
I will say, because I had to look it up, but he did start off as a villain, I should know. But I had a moment of like, have we seen Finn Rao's hair? And we have, and it's also a very creepy douchey haircut. But yeah, he also started off as a villain. So.
It's not as bad as Ball Saxon's, though. But they all kind of have creepy haircuts anyway, but Ball Saxon's is just especially so. It's like the haircut version of a creepy twirly, like greasy mustache. Let's see, what else do I got here?
There's an old Wizard Rock song called "Creepy Mustache," and that's what I keep thinking of it. And it's a Wizard Rock song about the actor who plays Remus Lupin in the third Harry Potter movie, and how his mustache is creepy. And the song just goes, "I got a creepy, ooh, I got a creepy mustache. I got a creepy, ooh, I got a creepy mustache. If you remind me, I'll send it to you." Because that's what I keep saying creepy hair, and that's what I keep thinking of.
Yeah, it is creepy. I like that she pulls the Dooku head chop maneuver without actually doing the head chop. She's no Anakin.
There's a lot of memes of that, of like Sabine in that position, and under it has Palpatine going, "Do it,
do it,
do it." That's a meme scene, I promise.
This episode has something that's been sort of a trope in the Mandalorian TV show in it, which is somebody about to shoot somebody from behind and somebody else taking him out, you know, with the tricky, you hear the shot fired and then you see the shot over the shoulder where it turns out the person who was going to shoot him actually got shot, and then you see whoever saved him. That's happened like 3 times in The Mandalorian and now in this, so maybe that's just a sort of going to be a running gag with Mandalorians.
I remember watching that scene. I didn't note it, but I remember watching that scene for the first time and just like the gasp I made with the thought. I was like, did they just kill Sabine?
I think they've done it with Baby Yoda twice in The Mandalorian, so... I only have one other note. It's a minor nitpick, but like this is always a plot device, and it's always a good handy plot device in a show where you only have 22 minutes and you have to where you have basically Sabine's mom's betrayed the Jedi and you know, basically Sabine too, because you know they're her friends. And she sold them out to the Empire, you know. And so, but quite conveniently, she's betrayed by the people she betrayed them to. And everybody's forced onto the same side. And it sort of gets rid of the whole, it allows them to be allies and get rid of the whole, like, hey, you were just going to sell us over to the Empire, you know. So,
half agree with that.
Saying it's a minor nitpick, but that's just sort of a plot device-y sort of thing that'll get used sometimes so you don't have to deal with everybody going like, hey, Ursa, hey, fuck you, you know?
Yeah, the only thing that would make me not agree with that is the conversation Sabine and Ursa have in R2, where it's very clear that Ursa really doesn't like that she serves the Empire, but it's more of a need than a want.
I'm talking more like Kanan and Ezra.
Yeah, we don't know how much time passes between the end of the battle and Chopper showing up with the ship.
That's true.
Yeah, so they might have had a talk there that we don't know about. But so I see what you're saying, but I don't fully agree with it.
it's just sort of like a little shortcut, you know, that stops you from having to. It's good because you don't need you don't need to see whatever trust issues they'd have to work out between then and ongoing, but
but
that's all I got for Act 3.
Most of my notes are actually kind of small for the rest of my notes, so I'll get the smallest ones out of the way. For some reason, I don't know why, because I had only seen this episode like once before rewatching it, and I've seen like bits and parts of it here and there, but actually sitting down and rewatching it, for some reason I thought this was a two-parter. I don't know why, but it felt longer in my brain. And so when I remember as we were getting closer to this episode, I was looking at it and I was like, wasn't this a two-parter? It's not? Oh, a lot happens then. So yeah, for some reason, I thought it was a two-parter, and I was very surprised, and I was like, oh, it's one episode.
You can sort of think a part, the last episode as being a part one. You know, the last episode and this episode are, I mean, it wasn't a cliffhanger, but they sort of bookend each other.
And maybe that's what it is, whenever I thought back to this area. That probably is the reason, because Trials of the Darksaber and Legacy of Mandalore are very much tied to each other. So maybe that's the reason I thought it was a two-parter, but, like, I feel like I remember two episodes being here. And I think we're back here on the season finale. I think they come, if I remember correctly, in Zero Hour, they come back to this place, so maybe that's what it is, too. But for some reason, I thought it was a two-parter. In big letters, I wrote Action Rao. Action Rao! Rao just busting in through the window was just like, yeah!
He's been sneaky Rao up until Action Rao, but that's what Mandalorians are. First he was like hiding Rao, then sneaking Rao, then Action Rao.
He moved really fast from the in the course of Ursa having that conversation with Saxon. Rao went from being outside to in the vent outside the room in the conversation time. And I was like, holy fuck, how fast are you running? He covered, like, a football field's worth of, like, area in the conversation, took that, and got into the vent, and crawled to that place, and got to that spot. In the time it took Ursa to have that conversation with Ball Saxon, I was like, good lord, Rao, you are booking it.
It's because we've just been seeing, because he started out as kind of a grumpy prick, and he's mellowed out a lot, and then he was sneaking around, but we forgot that he's a badass, you know?
He went from Prick Rao to Uncle Rao.
Yeah.
Badass Uncle Rao.
He definitely has taken a chill pill, you know. You can see his whole demeanor is relaxed when he's not in battle.
You know, that's a good point. I'm wondering if it's because he has something to believe in now.
Yeah.
Before he was just kind of in survival mode with the protectors, but now he actually has something he believes in.
That's... probably something very important to a Mandalorian, you know, to their whole image of themselves.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
In big letters I wrote, Sabine has a flamethrower now.
Now I just see a bottle, a vodka bottle that says Absolute Rao. Oh. We have like five big bottles of vodka in the house.
Don't use vodka to make hand sanitizer, guys.
No,
it doesn't work that way.
It's for it's actually being used in instead of what the hell is that brand name stuff that you spray on clothes to get smells out of them?
Febreze.
Yes.
What?
It's more like, I mean, my roommate used to run a secondhand store. And like misting vodka, like we have clothes from the store that are out in the garage and they get a little musty smelling and stuff like that. And you, even when you wash them, they're a little sketchy. Or like, you know, you go out to the club and you get a little cigarette smoke smell on your jacket. You can spray it with vodka.
Really?
It looks like a charm. They use it in the theater a lot. Yeah. Oh. And she's got it to use at home and. You know, she's going to have some time, it looks like, in the near future to clean up some clothes, get them up on eBay and stuff like that. So
I did not know that you could do that. I learned something today.
And if we go post-apocalyptic, we can sell vodka to the alcoholics.
Yeah.
We're going to need it.
So, again, Sabine has a flamethrower now.
Yeah. she's not afraid to spray it right into somebody's face.
I was trying to think, I'm like, do we ever see Sabine's flamethrower ever again in the show?
I don't remember, but I don't have the best memory. Like when I watched Rebels, I did this every episode. It would come on, it would start, and I would do just what I would do with Clone Wars, which is reach for my notes and start taking notes on it and then go, oh shit, that's right, I'm just watching this, and then I would just let it wash through me.
Uh-huh.
And I was, you know, I was remembering it week to week and season to season, but I wasn't like, you know, really like completely analyzing it, because I knew I was going to be, I knew the next time I watched it, I would be taking notes and deep diving into it. So I just let it do a wash the first time. Very, very similar with Resistance.
Actually, I'm looking at the flamethrower portion of Wikipedia, and the only time we see a flamethrower in Rebels is this episode. So no, it doesn't look like Sabine. Use your flamethrower more, girl. Come on.
It's okay. It'll be a nice little Easter egg when the people who got sucked in by the Mandalorian watch it.
Yeah. In big letters, I also have written, "Space Dad is proud of his space daughter," and they hug. I love that moment because Kanan's just like, "I am so," and she's like, "Don't say you're proud." He's like, "I wasn't gonna say you're proud. Hug me." I love them, Chris. Chris, I love their relationship. I love Space Dad and Space Daughter.
We know
Hope.
Oh, we know.
I love them. Kanan's the best. All right, now for my other notes. Sabine's fight with Saxon is just so good. My favorite shot is that moment where they're running at each other across the ice, and it's that kind of like zoom in shot as they're running at each other. I love that shot. It's one of my favorite shots of all of Rebels. Like, when I think about Sabine, like, that is one of the shots that I like think of in my brain. Like, it's up there. I love their entire fight, and she's just a fucking beast.
Fighting on cracking ice is always dramatic. And they didn't play it. They didn't play it as the ice might break underneath them. I wasn't really worrying about that. It was more for drama, you know. It was more to just sort of add atmosphere and, you know, describe the situation. And then there was stuff that was just visually neat, like when he would bear down on her with the Darksaber. And you could see that the cracks would spread under her feet because she had more weight on, you know, he would be like literally pushing her down. You could see the ice bow down a little bit like real ice does. It was really neat looking. Yeah. And it sort of reflected the emotional states of everybody and the cracking and splintering Mandalorian clans.
Symbolism.
Bum bum.
But I also, looking at their skills, I started, this was the first time I really noticed it. You can tell that she has trained with a lightsaber and he has not. Because Ball Saxon's just kind of like swinging it around like a normal sword. But you can tell Sabine, when she's using Ezra's lightsaber, she clearly has more skill. And it's very subtle. It's kind of like the difference between that fight that Ahsoka had with Cato Parsidi in the Cad Bane episode with the shapeshifter, and Cato has taken on the form of Jocasta Nu, and they're both fighting with lightsabers, and Cato as Jocasta Nu is just kind of swinging around the lightsaber while Ahsoka actually has skill using it, and that's what it reminded me a lot of. But you can actually tell that Gar's just kind of like swinging that sucker around, and Sabine's actually using methods that she learned. Yeah.
She's using actual swordsmanship. And he's like using stuff he picked up in other training, you know, just general, yeah, like wielding a stick or a club type stuff. He knows how to guard himself and stuff, but it's all just like brute force, whereas she knows how to work it. I mean, it's pretty important that she actually is tossed a real lightsaber too, just like here. Well, not that the Darksaber isn't a real lightsaber, but that's pretty strong thing for a Jedi to toss you their lightsaber when you're not a Jedi.
It kind of hit home that point that Kanan made last episode, where she was like, "I know how to fight with a sword," and Kanan was like, "Yeah, but you don't know how to fight with a lightsaber."
Yeah.
And it kind of nailed in that point too.
Well, I remember, and I probably brought this up in the show before, somebody was talking about, and I can't remember if it was from one of the movies or the animated stuff, but they were talking about how a lightsaber felt in your hand. And how it worked, and they said it's not just like, you know, you have a stick with light in it and you could swing it around like you would imagine. It's sort of They sort of compared it to if you've ever had something with a gyroscope in it, you know, with a spinning gyroscope, and you're holding it, and it wants to go straight up, but, like, when you move it, you sort of have to fight it a little bit. And, like, if you didn't know how to use a lightsaber and you were holding it, you were sort of fighting it, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, and you had to learn how to move with it, and, you know, and Kanan was adding to that by, like, seeing how they feel, you know, the blades feel drawn together and stuff like that. So there's a whole physics involved in using a lightsaber too.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine a lot of that also has to do with the Force too. So yeah, it's a complicated thing to learn. That it's one of those things that looks really easy, but apparently is very hard.
Yeah. But my last note is, this is kind of a two-parter. Like, I have my real note and the funny follow-up. I love Sabine's choice of whether or not to kill Saxon, because that's a good moment to show both sides of her life. Because the Mando way would have had her kill Saxon, because that's what Mandalorians do. But she also has her... So even though she's a Mandalorian, she also has her space family side of her life, which taught her the value of life. And both are important, because, like, one is her history and one is her state now. And I like that she had that choice in the choice that she made. In the follow-up I had, this is also a kid's show. You probably shouldn't have one of your young characters murder somebody.
Yeah, it wasn't going to happen like that in this show. But at the same time, you know, I mean, they set it up like that. I mean, there'd already been just a mention in this episode, a little foreshadowing about, like, you know, keeping your head with the Darksaber. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was very nice.
Yeah, I like the symbolism and then the practicality of it.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
But that is all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, you ready to score it up?
Yes, score it up, Chris. Scored the puppy chicks up.
I gave it an 8.5.
Ooh.
Not quite as high as the last episode. I thought the last episode just stood out by the sheer nature of it being so different than the anything else that's come before it. So this one gets 0.5, but it's a very good episode.
Yeah. I have the same thing. It wasn't quite as good as last episode for me. And just a reminder, last week I gave it a 10 out of 10. This is a really great episode. I love Ursa's character, and I think she's a wonderfully complex character. I love how far Sabine has come, even just from last week's episode, taking on the responsibility of the Darksaber. Finn Rao is a fucking action hero, and I love it. It's so funny. And it's the fights are just beautiful. There's so much good stuff in this. I love the family drama. I love Ezra just being like, hi, guys. Oh, God, guns. I love so much about this episode. So I gave it a 9 out of 10.
Woo.
I'm very concerned because I'm scoring all these high episodes. And I'm like, but I know my favorites of this season. Like, one of my favorite episodes is next week. And I'm like, well, one of my favorite episodes of next week outscore this one? Probably, because it has Blue Husbando and Cowles in it. Well, and Ari in it. Ari's in next week's episode, too. So I'm very excited. So.
Nothing wrong with having a whole string of high-scoring episodes. So
yeah. It's going to make scoring the season at the end of the season very hard.
It might.
Pretty much, Rebels season 3. Like, I think from here on out, like, it's just gas on the pedal. Like, there's only kind of one episode where I'm just like, oh, I remember that being an okay episode, and another one that I'm like, that was fine. But really, it's like, through Imperial Eyes, Twin Suns, 0 hour, and I'm just like, fuck yeah! Let's do this! and in the middle of that is Secret Cargo and Double Agent Droid, so... Anyway, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, soon to be a website. And this week, our feedback comes from, and what I wanted to do this week, there's a lot of feedback this week, you guys, but I wanted to finish up the commentaries. So we have our reviews for the 200th episode, which was our great ranking, our review of Tross, and our season 1 review of The Mandalorian, wrapping up all the commentaries. I do want to note that you guys, for the Great Ranking had posted some of your rankings of Star Wars movies. We just don't have time to read them here, but we did see them. We love your rankings. I did, like, we made a comment about them. So thank you guys for submitting your rankings too, even though I don't have them posted here just because we don't really have time to read them all. So thank you, you guys. I just wanted to note that.
Go listen to episode 200 to hear what our rankings are so you'll know what these numbers actually mean.
My scandalous ranking.
We all had our scandals in there.
Had the biggest scandal.
All right. The first one comes from Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
And he says, I guessed Chris's number 12 and 8 correctly so far. LOL. Number 8, I could tell was coming hearing previous commentary on that one.
I don't remember.
LOL again.
What was your 12th? 8?
What's that? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Like you guys. Oh, my. Oh, yeah. You know what my number 12 is.
Clone Wars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you guys, I keep changing orders, especially with the most recent 5 movies. First off, it is very cool to see different perspectives of Star Wars. You guys show that it's very personal and any order is acceptable depending on how someone experienced it. Oh, yeah. Guys made me think about what my number one movie would really be. This is why. I was 6, it was the mid-80s, and some of my number one toys I played with were from Jabba's Palace. I did not get into watching Star Wars until I was about 13, when I watched them and recorded them on VHS off USA Channel. Oh yeah. I felt like the movies got better and better. Return of the Jedi was great for me because all those toys all of a sudden came to life in Jabba's palace. Most of the toys got cameos, but it was fun pointing them out, like the green sail barge guy with the helmet. For me, the ending worked because I did not realize that Harrison Ford wanted to kill off his character and all the Ewoks were meant to promote toy sales and make the movie more for kids. Oh no. I guess it worked for me, and that is my number one. As for episode 9, I have seen it a second time, and that gave me more of the fuzzy feeling than the first time. Oh yeah, fuzzy feeling. Possibly this will happen for you guys as well. We'll find out soon enough in the plague days.
I'm so excited. There's some Patrick Delmores in here, and you haven't done a Patrick Delmore voice in forever.
I know, they're not long though, so you're just gonna get a little taste.
I
little
know.
Taste coming up of Delmore coming up. Okay, so
and, this was in regards to your everyone's rankings and almost everything all of them had Clone Wars at the
everybody
bottom.
Everybody putting Clone Wars at the bottom and hope says, y'all hurting me with these Clone Wars ranking, LOL. And Patrick Delmore says, great series, mediocre movie. And then Hope says, boo. And then Paul C. Kelly says, if it makes you feel any better, Hope, I would put Umbara, Ahsoka, Fives, Yoda, Citadel, and probably other arcs in the top 5 if they were movies. Oh, yeah.
True.
Yeah, that. if you were cutting other stuff from Clone Wars into a movie, I would agree with that. There's several, you could make several badass movies.
I think it was Skytalkers. And, yeah, it had to be Skytalkers because I was listening to it on the drive back from Florida. They were doing, before Clone Wars started, like, their favorite moments of Clone Wars. And I think they had mentioned at some point that the Maul arc on Mandalore with Pre Vizsla, they got to see that in a movie theater. And I just, like, my jaw dropped. I was like, oh, my God, I would love to see that
arc. That would be pretty cool.
That would be so cool. And I would love to, like, I would love for Celebration to do something like that. Just, like, show, like, Clone Wars arcs, like Umbara on a movie theater or the Maul arc in a movie theater. Just to be, like, so you can see it on the big screen. That'd just be so cool.
Yeah, it would be nice. All right. So the next group we have here, this is from the Rise of Skywalker review episode. And the first one's from Patrick Delmore. And he said, really digging this one so far. About an hour in. And I assume he's done by now.
I put that in there just because I wanted a reason for you to do the Patrick Delmore voice.
Thank you. And then Paul C. Kelly says, about an hour into the, everybody writes about a halfway through the, or well, like almost like less than halfway through the, about an hour into this one. Just heard you guys asking about who the heck that old lady was on Tatooine. Maybe it was old Hala from Splinter of the Mind's Eye. Ooh, yeah. Maybe she's living out her exile for some reason, or she warped in from the Legends Star Wars universe. Hala would be really old, though. It might be time for Star Wars Multiverse movie now. LOL. Sorry, just trying to make this better. LOL. All caps, LOL. And then Mike Zumo says, at first I thought it was the old lady from The Phantom Menace who told Anakin to get home, but she was long dead. She was long dead by then, or well, she should be long dead by then. It's so hard when I see Anakin there, though. As soon as I hear old lady from The Phantom Menace, I want to just say Annie, because she's just like, storm's brewing, Annie.
Yeah.
And then Mike Zumo's back with, I want to piggyback on something Arthur said about the reaction to the sequel. That's Arthur is speaking about me because my Facebook name's Arthur. Said about the reaction to the sequel trilogy. It definitely plays better to the kids than it does to us adults. If you listen to my podcast episode from late 2018 when my daughter and I went to see Superman in the theater, she actually says, I'm not that into Star Wars. When we left this movie, she was caught up in Star Wars, and we're going to dive into the films when we get time, which they have done. I've been watching it play out on
Facebook. Oh, it's so wonderful, Mike. Yeah. Like, I've been really enjoying reading your Facebook posts you and your daughter going through Star Wars. They're wonderful.
It got her interested. I think they just got to A New Hope recently.
They did. They're doing Empire next week.
It got her interested. I think the thing us adults have to remember is that those things don't necessarily grow with us, and it's okay for us not to be the target audience forever.
And I think they're going in chronological order too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which
I think you're right.
Yeah, they're going chronological order. So they did Prequel and Solo, Rogue One, and now they're just doing
Solo and stuff, right? Yeah. This film has its problems, like the hour-long first act Uncharted video game, but this film was a great experience with my daughter, and I'm grateful for that. And Dario Gonzalez said, my son told me going in that all he wanted to see was just one Porg, and he left very happy. Oh man, it's good to have a low bar, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Dario's a son is a kid. Leave him a be.
Well, no, I'm not saying that even sarcastically. It's like if that's what's gonna make you happy, then you're guaranteed a good time, you know? Okay, so the last set here is from the Mandalorian season one review that we did with Aaron Henley. And we've got Paul C. Kelly says, Bill Burr has a podcast. I am going to have to check that out. Mayfield represents Planet Pisa. I have no idea. Pistonians talk funny. LOL. Oh, yeah, they have Boston accents.
And then Chris said, Bill Burr has one of the biggest podcasts out there.
Actually, Bill Burr is one of the biggest podcasters out there, and he's like one of the most popular podcasters out there, Paul C. Kelly. It's like, it's a good podcast. Last one comes from Gene Hendricks. It says, it strikes me as funny that you guys know Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad or Once Upon a Time. And I'm over here thinking of him as Mike Giardello from Homicide in the Streets.
I don't know.
Well, the reason is I've never seen Homicide: Life in the Street, so I don't know nothing about it. I've seen Breaking Bad, and I never seen Once Upon a Time, so that's why I know him.
I feel bad. I actually want to really know how to say his name, because you just said Giancarlo. I've heard one Carlo, and I've also heard Giancarlo.
Giancarlo.
I'm like, how do you say Giancarlo Esposito?
I don't know. I didn't say it. That was Gene saying it. That's how Gene pronounces it when I become Gene. I'm a method actor, so he is Gene, so he pronounces it Giancarlo Esposito.
So I wrote in big letters, we gotta eat candy, because Chris immediately after last week's episode, I messaged Chris and I was like, we forgot to eat candy.
I know. I would have liked to have eaten some candy last episode too. What are you looking at here?
I'm down to 5 in this box, and then we have the new box of the Kit Kats that Dario sent to us. So, I don't know.
You want to do the Snickers dark?
Sure. All right. So if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's a weirdo. Chris social distances himself from American Kit Kats. You like that? Pandemic jokes. Yeah. So our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review because Dario is Dario, you're a flight attendant. Please be careful. We love you. Don't do anything. Please be careful. Wash your hands. And this week our candy I lost my spot. I know I just saw it. It's the Snickers Dark coming from Japan.
Mm-hmm. I'm already eating it.
You've already eaten it?
It's actually too little Snickers Dark. It comes in... I think the Japanese like to eat, have like smaller, like a little portion at a time. It is exactly like I would expect it. It tastes like a Snickers, but it's definitely...
Dark chocolate.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like after you chew it a while that you start tasting the dark chocolate, but it's good. Yeah.
It's not as sweet as I thought it was going to be.
And the nougat is chocolatey in it, too, instead of the white nougat.
It is! I was trying to figure out what that was.
It's chocolate nougat, not white nougat.
Mmm. I'll have to save the rest of that for later.
Mm-hmm.
Mmm. Thank you, Dario. Please be safe with your flight attendant job. Watch your hands. Oh my god. I just took a huge bite. And I'm out of water! No, I'm not. I have water all the way over here!
For all you people who are hoarding water in your house, just remember there's this magic thing in your house. It's called a sink. And some that shit just pours right out of the sink for free. Yeah.
I mean, some people don't have access to water. But if you do have access to water, stop fucking hoarding water. I mean, we were out of, like, ground beef and chicken legs. And I'm like, God forbid there's a power outage. Because you people hoarding fucking chicken thighs. You're going to lose all your meat. And that sucked. So, that was delicious. All right, Chris, do you have anything else about Legacy of Mandalore?
Nah, I'm all done with that.
All right, so where can people find you?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our website. Who knows what it's going to be looking like now, but it's going to be changing soon. And you can see all our podcasts there. You can sign up for our RSS feeds, or you can sign up on iTunes. We are also on Facebook with the Two True Freaks podcast page, where we also post all our episodes or like any breaking news or anything like that. And then we have a sort of hangout discussion page called the Two True Freaks Cantina. Also, we are on the cursed Twitter platform, and the Two True Freaks on Twitter is run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene
Hendrix, play Doctor.
Thank you.
He runs our Twitter page.
I'm literally here all week because we're stuck in our house.
Yeah, we're all here all week. So, yeah, you're not going to have to worry about the podcast drying up for better or worse. So there's that. All right, so that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me...
Besides, just at home.
With my cats. You can find me at Jaguars and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinex on Twitter. I have my website, geekygirlexperience.com. It's up. It's running. I have, as of this recording, the first 3 episodes of Clone Wars reviewed. I'm going to be doing episode 4 this week before the next one comes out. I did like massive catch up. I wrote those 3 articles in like 4 days. So I had to take a tiny break because I was like, oh, Clone Wars, I love you, but I'm burned out for half a second. So that's going to be coming soon. So by the time this episode comes out, I'm probably going to be up. And So yeah, like, I have my website. There's a little Ko-fi button on there, so if you want to buy me a coffee, that'd be awesome. If you like what I do. And I also write fanfiction on Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia. I have a Thrawn fanfiction. I have an Agent Kallus fanfiction. I have been very behind on my fanfiction writing. But at the same time, everything's been crazy, so I'm looking forward to getting back to that soon. And oh my god, you guys! We're going to be doing Through Imperial Eyes next week, which is one of my favorite episodes of all of Rebels. One of my favorite Rebels episodes. It's the one where Kallus is like, I'm a spy, and then Yularen's here, and I'm just like, Yularen, do you remember your Jedi friends from Clone Wars? And Thrawn's just like, I'm looking for a spy, and Ahri's just like, I'm an evil bitch, and Ezra's like, I'm here. And meanwhile, Lieutenant List is like, what's going on, you guys? I'm Lieutenant List, and I'm adorable. Where's my crayons? I'm so excited for next week.
I'm going to have to think of something nice to say about Thrawn.
I have my running list up there. You can't talk about his appearance, and you can't say that he never killed a character that you like.
I won't repeat. I know the rules.
I know. I got your list running. So, yeah. Through Imperial... Hey. No, I inhaled like the last little bit of Snickers.
Watch out, it's the cornholio viral. It's catching up with you.
Bye, you guys.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.